I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. News from Denmark this past week that the venerable toy company Lego is in some trouble. Posting losses in the hundreds of millions, firing senior executives, retrenching back to its core business of making little colorful blocks for little kids, and hoping just to break even this year. The current Lego boss, Kjellkirk Christensen, says last year was very, very bad. He runs the company started 72 years ago when his grandfather switched from making stepladders and ironing boards to wooden toys. Lego's come a long way from that humble beginning. It's ranked as one of the largest toy empires in the world. The British Toy Council termed Lego the toy of the century in the year 2000. And the company kept growing, cranking out not just 20 billion little colored blocks a year, but recently charging into a host of new areas, building bionicle action figures, making robotic blocks that talk to a PC, branching into Lego clothing and shoes, cartoons, movies, branding link-ups with Nike, the NBA, Harry Potter, Star Wars, and, well, it was just too much, too fast. Now, no one owns a share of the Lego company. It's still privately held by Denmark's Christensen family, but many of us have an emotional investment in Lego, as a toy for our children, or a toy that we played with and passed down, the proverbial bucket of Lego in the basement. Today we're looking at what happened to Lego as a way of understanding what's happening to toys. Did Lego lose its way, lose sight of what kids want? Was it too seduced by the idea of putting Spider-Man or Dora the Explorer in those boxes along with the little colored plastic blocks? Or is it really becoming difficult to figure out what toys work today? What's your Lego perspective? Our number's 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. And we will talk with kids and grown-up toy experts today. We're going to start with Michael McNally. He is the Senior Brand Relations Manager for Lego in the United States. Michael, it's good of you to join us.
Thank you for having me, Dick.
What's the short version in your office of what went wrong? Did I get it right? Too much, too fast, too broad?
Well, I think a little bit of that, Dick, and also what you were talking about, the fact that the toy industry has just become extremely fashion-driven and is really one that's tough to figure out at times. I think a lot of people will feel the same thing, and you have to be willing to try new things, and you have to be willing to stop doing them if they're not working for you.
Fashion is a very risky and expensive area to get into, though, isn't it?
It certainly is, and you know, I think kids have so many different options these days between video games and gadgets that really have become toys or occupy children's time. They're busier than they used to be. They're getting a little bit older than at a younger age than they used to be. And it's just more difficult to capture their imaginations and to really strike the chord to keep them interested in what you've got.
Tell me what you're hearing, Michael. Are people saying, hey, what happened to my old Lego set?
You know, we hear that a lot, and there are people who lament the fact that some things that we're doing don't look like what they're used to seeing. And I think there's a little bit of good and a little bit of bad in that. We're an evergreen classic toy that everybody remembers playing with when they grew up, and people like to know that they can rely on that quality and that same experience for their kids today. But at the same time, I think anybody would agree that if you're the same thing for year on year and you never change, you never do anything new, then people might say, gosh, you're just not keeping up with the times. So I think for us it's a matter of finding the right balance.
What is the right balance? What is the mission of Lego, the sort of definition of the core of the business?
I think what last year really proved for us is that we were on a path to grow our business very rapidly in lots of new different areas, and we may have lost focus on really what our brand is all about. At the end of the day, what we want to do is find the right time, the right consumers, and the right play patterns that will strike a chord and will not only bolster our classic construction business, but also show that we're forward-thinking, we're keeping up with the times, and we're relevant to everyone.
And so do people know what's happening in your office, or are people still tiptoeing around wondering and someone's going to hand them a pink slip.
You know, I think everybody is really embracing the news of last week. The fact that Kel is stepping back into a day-to-day management role with the company is so motivating for everyone. Everyone here at LEGO has such tremendous respect for what he's done throughout the years with his family business. And to maintain a business in this day and age that's family held for the last 72 years really speaks volumes to not only the power of the brand, but the power of the management. So I think it's a matter right now of finding that right strategy, sticking to it, and chasing it, maybe not as rapidly as we had hoped, but to make sure that we have stable growth, but also that we can continue to grow the business in a way that's healthy and profitable.
Michael, thanks for being with us.
No problem. Thanks for having
me. Michael McNally, Senior Brand Manager, Brand Relations Manager for LEGO in the United States. Joining me in the Connection Studio now, Jan Craig Singer. She's President and Executive Producer of Big Blue Dot, which specializes in branding and marketing for kids. Jan's also the Executive Editor of the company's bi-monthly Trend Update, a newsletter that monitors kids' culture. Also with me in the studio, Mitch Resnick. He directs the Lifelong Kindergarten Research Group at MIT's Media Lab, and his particular research group developed the programmable bricks that were the very basis for LEGO's Mindstorms robotics construction kit. Thanks, both of you, for coming in. It's nice to have you here.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Good to be here.
Jan, let me start with you. In your view, what went wrong?
Well, I think that Michael did a really nice job of self-assessing what went wrong at LEGO. I was really impressed with what he had to say. I think they went too far afield in some of the choices that they did in brand extension. I think sometimes it makes sense to license with it with some characters that are out there. You can't, in the kids' field, you can't sit and let everyone else do the buy the licenses and be there just being LEGO as a brand. I think some of the choices they made were not the wisest choices, and some of them they had no control over. And I think assessing that and going back to basics to start with and then growing in a stronger foundation makes a lot of sense for LEGO.
Okay, back to basics. Who are the clients? Who are LEGO's clients here?
Well, I think it's for LEGO, their best client is, first of all, male and boy. And I think it's, you know, the preschoolers, it's both female and male. But I think when you get to school age, 5 and up, it's definitely male. And the distinction becomes greater. And LEGO has certainly played to that strength. And it's become a real boy toy. And the greatest success they've had recently is with Bionicle, which is a little older, like the 8 to 10-year-old boy. It's their answer to Pokemon. It's their answer to Yu-Gi-Oh! They've created an action figure for boys that makes sense. They've created their own brand, and I think that was a really smart idea on their part.
And that's selling. That's making them a bit of money.
Absolutely. They packaged it well. They promoted it well. And it made sense because boys were already geared toward a backstory. A backstory. This is the first time LEGO really stretched out to create a backstory.
Sorry, what's a backstory?
A backstory, instead of just getting a little package of little brick blocks and creating your own ideas and creating your own stories to go along with it. Bionicle actually had a backstory with names of characters, with worlds that existed.
Okay, I've got you. So,
and much like Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh! Had done it.
All right. Now, Mitch, you are still at the cutting edge of what LEGO was hoping to do with something called programmable bricks. What do those do? I mean, it seems... I can imagine, I can remember the size and the feel and the taste and the smell of the little plastic ones. What were you doing with them?
Well, what we've done is take the classic Lego brick and put some electronics inside the brick so that kids can make their Lego creations come alive to interact and react to things. So with traditional Lego bricks, kids could do things like build something that looks like a rabbit and put the bricks together and build a little rabbit. With the new programmable bricks, they could build something that actually behaves like a rabbit. They could tell it to move forward, and if it bumps into something, to move around and turn a different way.
Controlling this with a computer?
So what they do is they create a program on a computer, then download it to this little brick, and then the program gets held inside the Lego brick, which sits inside the Lego creation.
These aren't the kids that Jan's talking about. These are older kids.
Well, typically the kids will get started maybe at age 9 or 10. This has also been quite popular with adults, as it turns out, and there's been a real following, you know, across the board. But with some of the older kids, you're right. I think, you know, we see in the future some ideas like this, though, extending down to kids of all ages. I think the key to it is, you know, that even though it's new technology, it's sticking to the values that made Lego successful in the first place. I think what really made Lego successful was it was a toy that allowed kids to explore, experiment, and express themselves. And we see that in a lot of the best toys are ones that leave control in the hands of the kids to let them use their own imagination to express their ideas to the world. That was true of the original Lego bricks, and we've tried to hold that up as a guiding principle as we've created a next generation of Lego bricks.
Now, this news from Denmark is still fairly fresh. Have you any idea whether or not Mindstorms will stay on the Lego shelf? Do we know what's happening?
Oh, certainly, you know, Mindstorms is, you know, will be part of the offerings into the future. Mindstorms has been especially successful in schools, where it's a more supportive environment, where people can, there's others around to help people learn how to use it.
Right.
So it's been especially successful there, and there are now, you know, literally thousands of schools and millions of kids who have used Lego Mindstorms in that setting, and that continues to grow rapidly.
So Jan, what's going to be cut? What's changing here? I mean, Lego says it's going to make some drastic changes. Is it getting rid of the little red T-shirt with the Lego logo on it? Is that what we're talking about?
No, in fact, I think that would be the last thing they get rid of. They have an incredibly strong brand and a well-deserved strong brand because for the most part, everything they do really has that strong foundation that's very educational. I think what's going to happen, as Michael had suggested, is they're going to really assess how they're going to extend their brand to create relationships. Some of the relationships they've built over the years, maybe in the past, you know, 3 or 4 years.
So maybe no more Harry Potter or Spider-Man.
Frankly, I think Harry Potter is a nice partnership. It's a good fit for Lego. I think a lot of people would maybe disagree. But it's a smart book. It's a well-written book. It lends itself to incredible imagination and storytelling beyond what the book itself tells you. Spider-Man, maybe not.
Mm.
Dora the Explorer, certainly for the younger set, that makes perfect sense. I mean, there are some things that do make a lot of sense. Other things, not so much. I think it's also hard to be all things to all people. And with Mindstorms in the schools, I'm not sure, Mitch, what school level they're at for the most part. And is it in the U.S.? Is it Europe? Where I'm not sure.
It's at the middle school levels where it's been most successful. And actually around the world, in China, it's growing incredibly rapidly with, now every year doubling the number of schools. Last year I was in Singapore, and in the tiny island of Singapore, there were 300 different teams competing in these, robot design competitions.
Well, and I think that's important, too. There's an educational factor to Lego that they can grow their educational branch of the company and then grow the marketing end of the company in a different way. They're not so different, but one is more of a moneymaker and one is more of a brand builder. I think that's the way to go for them.
Right. And I think the idea of keeping the focus on learning, which is inherent, I think people recognize that. Just walking in today when I had the receptionist here, when she saw me, she said, her 18-year-old son still plays with Lego, and she thinks that's what made him so smart. And I think people intuitively feel some type of connection there and trying to make sure that the products are presented in a way that helps emphasize the type of learning that goes on just as part of the everyday play activity. Too often these days, there's a lot of so-called edutainment products that try to have you, learn something and give you some reward in response to that. And that's not the approach that we see here. What we'd like to see is that play and learning just integrated together in a very natural way.
It's been almost 40, depending on what country you're talking about, 30, 40, 50 years that people have been playing with the small plastic Lego bricks. There is a zen about this toy. And Connection listeners, we'd like to hear your thoughts about what's happening within that company and what it tells us about the way that we play with toys differently today. We purchase toys, or our children choose to make those purchases themselves. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
Support for it.
I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. This hour, we're talking about Lego. 1-800-423-8255 brings you into the conversation that we're having. Mitch Resnick's here with me in the studio. He's director of the Lifelong Kindergarten Research Group at MIT's Media Lab. Jan Craig Singer is also here. She's president of Big Blue Dot, a company specializing in branding and marketing for kids. And let's take our first call from Buffalo, New York. Joe's calling in. Hi, Joe. Thanks for calling.
Oh, well, thanks for doing such an important show. Just had a little story. I have a 9-year-old and a 6-year-old, and I've was looking for plain plastic block Legos for my kids for a few years and had to continually buy kits of with different animals and storylines that came with them. And I found myself in Minneapolis at the Mall of America in Legoland, and I thought, oh, my gosh, this is the place to get the bricks. I can buy a box of bricks so my kids can build things. And they had a huge Big Ben, two stories tall, many buildings and things built out of just basic bricks, and it was amazing.
And no plain bricks for sale, Joe?
Not in Legoland. I could not buy a box of plain bricks so my kids could build things from their own imagination and from the environment around them that they see and they try to emulate.
Did you play with Lego as a kid, Joe?
Of course.
And is that part of why you're interested in making sure that your own kids do that?
I see Lego as being something that gave me an ability to construct things out of basic little building blocks and to make things come to life, to make animals, to make cars, trucks, buildings. And it gave me an ability, and I think that led me to carpentry later on in my life and building houses.
When you hear about the action figures and the programmable bricks that we're talking about and all the other things that Lego is into, is that the grown-up in you resisting that, or is that your own kid saying, oh, Dad, all we really want is a couple of bricks to stick together?
I think that it's so meshed together, to pull those things apart are impossible because there's so much input into the children's lives from the media, from advertising, from other children, that to try to distinguish where that impulse is coming from is difficult. But I know that when they just have a pile of Legos in front of them and no directions and no picture books that come with the Lego kits, and they just start making things on their own, that's when they've been most engaged with the Lego product.
Now, Joe, thanks for calling in.
Oh, thank you, Dick. Have a good day.
Mitch, an 8-year-old and a 6-year-old, and Joe's description of what he wants Lego to be for them.
We hear that from a lot of parents, and I really I'm sympathetic at that point of view, because I do think a lot of the best experiences that come from Lego is with the big pile of bricks and kids using their own imagination. Sometimes you see that things have drifted in the direction of having a kit where kids would then build according to the instructions, make a very nice model, and then gets put on the mantelpiece, and they're done with it. And I don't think that's where the best learning experience comes from. So I really agree with Joe there. A lot of times, having some suggested models, of course, is good, and having some storylines to provoke ideas and to, you know, help stir the imagination is great. On the other hand, I think it's important not to drift away from that core experience of letting kids come up with an idea and then playing it out in the world.
Quick question, Jan, for you, just about who's making those decisions there. You can hear the indecision in Joe's mind.
I was just going to say, it sounds like it's more Joe's dilemma with it than it is with his own kids. It's the same reason parents want their children to watch commercial-free television. They want to be able to control the experience or have it be more pure. And I think that that's what Joe is referring to, trying to create that pure experience for his kids. Part of it, I think, for him may be nostalgia, and part of it may just be that he understands the importance of Legos as they are, as the bricks are, as an educational tool, as an imagination tool as well for his own children.
But at 12 to 15 to 25 bucks a box, it's the parent who's swiping the card, not the kids, right?
That's right. That's right. But on the other hand, children are asking for these licensed characters. The children are driving, in part, much more so than when we were kids. Children are asking for things specifically by name, by licensed figure and character. And if it happens to be Lego, too, that's great. So sometimes it may be introducing Lego to a group of children who wouldn't ordinarily be introduced directly with their parents. And so I think in some ways they've done a lot of kids in the U.S. in particular a favor.
Although I would say it's important to see that these two different dimensions don't have to be mutually exclusive. It's fine for kids to build a Lego, a Harry Potter figure, but then build their own castle. And it might give them the idea to build a castle, and they don't have to follow the instructions to build the castle one way, but then modify it or build it with a friend in a new way.
Oh, okay, we need to stop here because we need a reality check. And Amy Schluckabeer has been listening along to the program from Elizabethtown, Kentucky, and she's joining us on the phone now. Hi, Amy.
Hi. Okay.
Now, first of all, I gather that congratulations are in order. Your team just won the Kentucky State Lego Competition. Is that right?
Yes.
You must be pretty excited about that.
Oh, yes. We're going to Atlanta, Georgia for an invitational.
With a mock-up of a Mars rover, is that right?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so you know about building and controlling and the electronics and all that side of it, right?
Yes.
I want you to take us back a little bit, Amy, to help us figure out what's the real appeal of Lego. How long have you been putting those little bricks together?
My mom says I started when I was four. So I've been, but I started out with just the basic bricks.
And what do you think about the basic bricks? Do you need more now to have fun with it?
Well, now, as you grow older, you have different preferences. It depends on the person. If you're a more picky person and you want everything to be perfect, you might want to go by the instructions. But when you're a kid, you imagine all these different things in your head that could come true, and they don't have to be real. But finding instructions is also a good way to you feel complete whenever you finish one of those.
It's fun to get one done. Did you ever make one of those Harry Potter castles, one of the ones that came in the box?
I have them displayed all over my room.
Now, that means that you put it together and then you don't take it apart, right?
That's probably partly I would if I could. I'm in high school now, so I have, no time to do any of that. I am now doing internet websiting, and if I had the time, I would. But sometimes you don't want to take apart things that are so pretty.
Now, you realize that there are probably fewer girls than boys who are working with Lego, right?
Yeah, I'm the only girl on my team, and I was one of the only girls there at the competition.
Do they pay attention to you, the boys on your team?
Well, I've been with the team for about 3 years, so they know me, and they got to know me at the beginning. They did not respect me at all. They thought I was just there to play with Legos, but I was there to program, to build, and to use engineering to get the job done. And when they saw that I could do that, they respected me a lot more.
So what do you make of the suggestion from, toy experts, this is a boy toy, not a girl toy?
Well, I guess you could say it was a boy toy because there are more engineers that are boys than girls. Girls are more, I think, this is my opinion, more creative in things like that. Boys usually go into more something where they're higher on the scale, somewhere where they are in control. And Legos are a part of that, except for now, let's see.
That's all right. Take a break here. Jan wants to come in on the conversation.
Well, Amy, congratulations. But I absolutely agree with what you're saying in terms of it being more of a boy toy and less of a girl toy, or that girls play with it less, but maybe more creatively. And I think that that may be a way for Lego to think for future in a real elemental way, is to really study the relationship that girls have with these sorts of building toys. Now, spatial relationships and that style of learning tends to be more male-oriented, at least in the beginning, but girls are certainly very creative, and I think they just need to think from a learning perspective as well as a marketing perspective on how to reach the female audience. It's not to say that Legos couldn't be a female toy. They certainly could.
Mm-hmm. One thing that we've seen is it depends a lot on how it's presented to kids.
Yeah. And
if you suggest, well, why don't you go out and build a truck or build a tractor,
right,
a lot more boys are going to be interested in it. But the same materials, if you say, let's build an interactive sculpture and move it in different ways, or let's build for younger kids a day at the amusement park, and don't just build the merry-go-round, but build the parking lot and have people walking in. Right. The way you present it makes a big difference about which kids will get most engaged.
Are you on with that, Amy?
Yeah.
And as Amy was saying, boys tend to be more hierarchical and win-lose, whereas girls are more relationship building and play. And I think, as you were saying, Mitch, if you approached it from a girl point of view rather than a boy point of view in the packaging and the marketing of the materials, you'd have an audience.
Because one thing we've seen is that all kids like to design things, create things, and invent things, but they might create different sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important to have multiple pathways to let different kids build on their own interests and create the things they really care about.
Right. Amy, can you stay with us for a couple of minutes?
Yes, sure.
I'd like to bring Eric into the conversation now. Eric's calling in from Boston. And Eric, if my notes are accurate, you're 34 and still playing with Lego.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
What do you build?
Well, what I do is I buy them for my children for Christmas so that I can play with them. Actually, Amy, when she said engineering, that was always the big key for me. I went from Legos into college into an engineering program. It's not where I ended up, but I always assumed that that's where I'd go with it. There's three levels that the children build at, and adults too, if there's any out there who will admit that they do play with them. The first is building by the directions, which I think anybody can do and most parents do. The second is looking at the optional pictures they put on the back of the boxes and creating those. The third is to take a picture that's inside of your head and not from any outside source and creating that with Legos. And my daughter just made the second hurdle, and now she's doing from pictures, and she loves them.
How old is she, Eric?
She's 9.
And do you have some advice for the people who sell and market Lego bits? What would you tell them as they're busy trying to figure out what they ought to be when they grow up?
Well, they tried to appeal to the girls with what was called Belleville.
Is that the Clickets thing, the little jewelry bits? No, okay.
No, this is different. It was a campaign geared towards women. I can't remember when it initiated, or not women, but girls. And it was called Belleville. And you couldn't get very many in the U.S. It was a very limited promotion. I don't even know if it was a promotion, but you could get them in other countries.
Amy, do you know about this, the Belleville?
I think I know what he's talking about. The pieces that are pastel-y a little more.
Yes, exactly.
It's a color code.
Okay, gotcha. All right, go ahead, Eric.
So that it's very hard to get those now, so I would have to say that failed. The one that did appeal, I thought, to girls as well was the Harry Potter series, which appeals to imagination itself, and that seemed to be very successful, I would say, with both boys and girls, since I have a daughter right now who loved them. As far as the castle goes, I now have a castle that, you know, this is like my excuse is to go play with my daughter. I built her a Harry Potter castle that has every room ever referenced in the book, and it's about 2.5 feet tall, 2 feet by 3 feet wide. And this is made from all the old castle Lego pieces that you used to get, you know, back in the 70s when I was started playing with them. So, and she loves that. And she decorated all the rooms. But getting back to what Lego really departed from was the fact that you could make anything with the pieces that were provided in a lot of the basic sets. As soon as they started enlarging the size of the pieces, I would have to say dumbing down the directions so that the larger pieces would make bigger things, they took away the ability to now break that down and create something out of your own mind, because the pieces would only work for certain applications.
Eric, I want to turn to Amy here and find out, Amy, from you, if you were to give some advice to the Lego executives about how they should change what they're selling, not just for girls or boys, but just in general, what would you fix?
Well, let's see. I think Legos has two different feels, just because I'm on the robotics team. The robotics is a whole separate part. So that, of course, that will only apply to people who are in engineering. On the other side, I agree with one of the earlier talkers. She said something about how some storybooks like Harry Potter are acceptable, but like Spider-Man and all that, that's something that it belongs in comic books.
Not in a Lego box?
Mm-hmm. And making more of just tubs of Legos, because I remember getting a just a plain tub of Legos that had one of every, not one of every piece, but a certain number of every piece, and you can make anything with it. And I remember making towers, and that's what I most appealed to.
I'm sitting here with Mitch Resnick, who's one of the big brains who, you know, helped design some of the robotics that, mm-hmm. that you're working with now, Amy. And I'm Mitch, I'm interested in knowing when Amy describes that there's kind of like two Legos now. One is the robotics and one is the sort of base, beautiful, simple block, creative thing. Is that the way you see it as well? Is there any way of reconciling the two?
See, I think over time we'd really like to say it all merged together and it shouldn't feel like two separate worlds. Mm-hmm. I think Amy's right that right now it does feel somewhat like two separate worlds. And it's partly we're still in the infancy of the technology. I think I'd hope in the future that building things that move and interact and communicate with Lego doesn't feel like a classic engineering task, but feels more like just traditional Lego play. I think that if kids see the programmable Lego bricks just the same as a traditional Lego brick, that's when we will have succeeded. That they just integrate everything together. The same way that you can put a wheel on Lego and it doesn't feel like it's a whole separate thing, you should be able to, when you build your castle, put a little computerized brick that has a lighter that makes the door swing open when someone gets close to it, and it should be integrated in the play, not just for building a separate robot, but integrated whether you're building a castle or building an amusement park. It could just be part of the play activity.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Amy?
I totally agree with that.
It would also provide some kind of link for people like Eric and Joe and their kids, right? Who you have the adults who enjoy playing with it as well as young kids that are coming on.
Mm-hmm.
Amy, can you stick around a little bit longer for us? I need you to stay with us here. You're going to be our checker to make sure that we don't get too off base as we consider Lego. And a chance for me to invite other Connection listeners into the conversation. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. We're talking about a toy that has been around in some cases now for three generations, and it's one of those curious toys that gets put in a bucket or a bag or a box and put in the basement and dragged out when the grandchildren come visiting. Is that simply because it happens to be something that is relatively unbreakable, or is there more to Lego, and as the company tries to figure out what its future is, what sort of advice would you give those corporate executives? 1-800-423-TALK. That's the number to join us. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
Support for NASH.
1-800-423-8255 is the number to join The Connection this hour as we consider or reconsider the venerable toy Lego, those little colorful blocks that exist in bags and boxes somewhere in your house. You just can't remember where. 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. We're going next to Cambridge, Massachusetts. Scott's joining us now. Hi, Scott.
Hello.
So tell me about Lego in your life.
Well, Legos definitely played a fairly significant role in my life. We definitely still have that box of, in our case, it's a suitcase of Lego down in the basement. I'm 33 now. I'm an architect, and I'm studying at MIT. And one of the things we talk about here, actually, is this interesting relationship between imagination, creativity, and limits. And Lego is certainly, as I reflect back on my experience with Lego, this kind of interesting thing between the limits of the pieces that you had available and the and what you were trying to imagine and create out of it. We're always in a kind of interesting tension. And I remember specifically when Lego introduced the Space Lego, and I think that was probably around 1980, roughly. So I would have been about 10 years old. And one of the things that I had loved to build out of Lego were spaceships of all different types. But somehow when the Space Lego came out, it killed it for me. And I mean, it might have just been me getting older. But as I look back on that, I realized that an important thing happened. That was around the time that the people were introduced to Lego. And introducing the people to Lego did something very specific. It put a particular scale on the toy. Previous to that, I could be building a spaceship that might be, thousands of feet long and it was only 3 inches in my hand, or it might have been a model truck or something like that. And that question of scale was completely up to the person who was building it.
I never thought about that, but it's a fascinating observation. I don't know, Mitch, whether or not this is the sort of thing that you guys noodle over in the media lab.
Well, this idea about what type of constraints lead to the greatest creativity, I think, is a really important point. I think one thing that made Lego so successful was it does come with some built-in constraints, even with the basic brick. You could just build things out of modeling clay. But Lego, even the basic bricks, give you some starting point. And I think people have found, and it proved to be successful because it gave a good starting point for people to be successful building things that look good, but still be open-ended enough. And having that balance between structure and open-endedness, I think, is the key in creating a good design activity.
Yeah, and Jan, how do you ever know when you've made that one too many pieces? I can remember, you can build a roof out of Lego blocks, but it was really hard because it kept falling in. It ended up so top-heavy. This is just the square blocks. Well, right. Lego then came out with kind of like roof tiles or whatever, and it wasn't as much fun. It's the same sort of thing that Scott's talking about.
Right, right. Well, and when Scott was saying that, what it reminds me of, too, is how many kids read Harry Potter and then went to see the movie, and it's like, no, that's not who Hermione is. There's nothing better than your own imagination.
Right.
In whatever in life, there's nothing better than your own imagination. And so I think... But what Lego does is it gives you a great tool as a toy, and that's what it is. It's a toy. It opens your mind. It allows you to explore in ways that you wouldn't otherwise, that you can't just do with your fingers or your hands or a piece of paper.
And I think there's an opportunity today because as you look in the current economy, creativity and creative thinking are going to be more valued than ever before. As you look around to what's needed in the future economy, it is people who can think and act creatively and quickly. So toys that support kids developing creative thinking is going to be ever more important. So being able to create the next generation of toys that will lead to the next generation of creative people is going to be ever more important.
I liked reading about the leadership seminar that would gather a group of important corporate executives together and give them each a pile of Lego and tell them to build something as a way of learning. Amy Schluckebeer, let me come back to you in Elizabethtown, Kentucky. When you listen to Scott's description of they went a little bit too far when they invented a man or when they made this one piece. Did you ever have a moment in your relationship with Lego where you kind of thought that you wish they hadn't done something?
Well, whenever we did the competition with Arctic Impact, there were a lot of pieces out on the market that were like it for the Arctic and all the different parts, and then they came out with Under the Sea. But sometimes they just have too many different faces, and you try to find the basic ones, and it's lost, and all these different other types. That is really creative, but sometimes you can't buy every single face.
Scott, are you still there in Cambridge? No, Scott has gone. 1-800-423-8255. We're moving along to Raleigh, North Carolina. Shelley, you're next. Hi there.
Yes, I just wanted to make a comment about the creativity. I agree with the people that were talking about the lack of creativity, I suppose. I feel like what's missing, and I come from many decades back, and incidentally I did work in the space programs myself, and I was on a peon level. But what I wanted to say was that it is the creativity that has gone from the toy world, and it's more about the bottom line. And I wish that they would not be
What do you mean by the bottom line, Shelley?
By the money. It's bred by the competition. There's so much competition, and you can't fault the companies because they have to make money. But it's not about the children, the way I see it. I look around me at the decades of children that I've lived with, and there's not as much creativity today as there used to be that I saw back in the old days. I see my nieces and nephews opening 10 presents, and they're overwhelmed when they're 2 and 3 and 4 by all these things.
What do you buy them, Shelley?
Pardon?
What do you buy them for a birthday?
I buy books, usually, or something that can challenge their minds. When I was a little girl, just to give you one example, I won't keep you on the line here, we didn't have a thing. I grew up in the farming community, tobacco fields. We had nothing. We got one toy if it was like at Christmas. But when we had some free time to play on weekends, on Sundays, we would go out into the woods, and we would create homes, gardens, you name it, out of moss, pieces of glass, twigs, whatever, leaves. You would be amazed what we could create from our minds. And that's, you don't need to spoon feed the kids so much. Mm-hmm. Why are we spoon feeding our children and putting things into their minds, hoping they'll create? This is not what creativity is all about. That's all I wanted to say.
Shelley, I couldn't agree with you more. I think what kids really need, all kids at all levels, at all ages, is just time to be by themselves, to think, to have some real metacognitive moments.
What does that mean, thinking about thinking.
Kids need to teach. They do it naturally, but if they don't have the time, they can't do it. I think most kids in the United States are overscheduled. They're overstimulated. They don't know how to be by themselves. They don't know what to do on an afternoon without a play date or homework or dance lessons or whatever. And I think we just need to relax and take a deep breath and give our kids some time to do that themselves.
Amy, you're chuckling there in the background.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about how different me and my brother are. My brother is like, he always needs a playmate. And whenever I go home, I guess it's from Legos because I've been so independent with it. I've just grown up. It depends on how you grow up, what you grow up with, how you develop, how you take in your surroundings, because everybody has their own personality.
And so you give some credit to your time with Lego in helping you develop that creativity?
Oh, there is so much that I devote to Legos and so much that I get out of it. Beforehand, I didn't know anything about programming, and it taught me how to problem solve and how to do step by step and get it all done and get the task at hand to get it finished.
Amy, your team is called the Crate Crawlers now. Crater Crawlers. Sorry about that. Where do you go from the Kentucky competition? Where's next?
We go to Atlanta, Georgia in April.
Good luck to you.
Yeah, I mean, one thing, it was great talking to Amy and hearing her story about learning through creating the robots. But for me, one of the most important things is seeing the connection between Amy building robots and Shelley, who we just heard from, who is building things out in the woods and, you know, in a very natural surrounding. People often see these as two wildly different types of activities. To me, they're very related, that a lot of the best experiences come when we're designing and creating things, whether it's going into the woods and using the sticks and the stones in the ground to build up something, or whether it's building with these high-tech Lego bricks. And I think what we really need to do is provide kids this wide range of different types of materials and experiences to let them play out their imagination the way it's worked in different ways for Shelley and for Amy.
You know, one of my favorite newspaper cartoons is a Calvin and Hobbes where the boy and his tiger come across this little stream and running through a pile of dirt and go, well, our afternoon's all booked up. 1-800-423-8255 to Foxborough, Massachusetts now. Cindy's joining us. Cindy, thank you so much for calling.
Thanks for having me on the show. I just had a comment. My husband was killed in the World Trade Center, and my two boys were 7 and 8 at the time. And they disappeared that afternoon, and I couldn't figure out what they were doing, and I went down, and they had built to scale replicas of both towers from the World Trade Center, and I found that that's how they worked out their grief, which I thought was really helpful and healthy for both of them. But they spent all afternoon working together on these two towers that were 110 stories. One of them had radio antennas on the top. It was very intricate, and it was a really healthy way to channel the energy and some of the feelings that they were having.
I'm so sorry about your husband, Cindy. Tell me on that day when you saw the towers, how did your boys explain what they'd done?
They just said, we built the towers, and shortly after that, they started crashing things into them. But, it took my breath away when I saw them and realized what they had done. But I thought, well, you know, they're working out some of their emotions and their feelings, and obviously they had a connection to their dad. Because on that day, we didn't know where he was. Because he was in the building, we didn't know if he had gotten out or if he was still trapped or if he had died or was alive or injured or what. But that's the way they worked it out.
What does it teach you about Lego?
Boy, it teaches me what a valuable tool it can be. And, you know, even in terms of emotions and how kids process grief and getting them to talk about it, a simple toy that's a block with four dots on the top can really be something so much more.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Nice to have you on the program. Think of the range of the the way that people have described this toy. I should tell you, Cindy, I've got a couple of speechless people in the studio here are just marveling at not only your articulate way of describing how the boys use that, but telling us a little bit something about how people use creativity to deal with what's inside, eh?
That's an amazing story, Cindy, and thank you so much for telling us about it. But I think it does speak to creativity, as you were saying, and as Mitch was saying, imagination and a tool for imagination, and kids need different types of tools, and that's one of them that really it's now a classic.
And it shows the value of giving kids sort of the simple parts that they can use to create the things that are most meaningful to them. So we see a lot of the most important experiences come when it's based on things that we care deeply about, and obviously in this case, but in lesser ways in our everyday lives. And giving kids flexible enough toys that they're able to take the things they care about deeply and to play with those ideas is where a lot of the most important, most enjoyable play experiences, but also some of the richest learning experiences will come from.
You know, if we just stack up all those toy companies like Hasbro and Mattel and put Lego in the mix, it stands somewhat apart from the others in that it doesn't try to be a bazillion other things. Is it going to be able to retain that identity, do you think, Jen?
Oh, I think so. I think because that is the foundation, and they will learn how to grow that foundation. But because it's there from the very beginning, they care very deeply about children and education, and that's not going to go away.
Yeah, I have to give a lot of credit to Kelt Christensen, who heads up the Lego company, the grandson of the founder. You meet him, and you can just see right away how deeply he cares about children and about the Lego values, the opportunity of giving kids a way to design and create their own worlds is the most important thing to him. And I think he's, even in these latest moves, making sure that that stays a central priority for the company.
Which sort of takes us back to where we began with Michael, the executive with Lego here, saying, thank goodness the man is back in charge of the company. Both of you, I want to thank you for coming in to be with me on the program today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Jan Craig-Singer is president of Big Blue Dot, specializes in branding and marketing for kids. Mitch Resnick is director of the Lifelong Kindergarten Research Group at MIT's Media Lab. Earlier we talked, as I mentioned, with Michael McNally, Lego representative in the United States, and Amy Schleckebier, who is a member of the Crater Crawlers, a Lego team that won the first Lego League competition for Kentucky State. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.